So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Tuesday is the anniversary of the first Tarzan movie to hit the silver screen.
Then on Wednesday, we tell the story of how Gottlieb Daimler inadvertently invented the motorbike.
On Thursday, we explain how MSG got demonized in the 1960s.
And on Friday, we revisit a legendary battle on a frozen Russian lake.
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the retrospectors. 10 minutes each weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Happy New Year. I hope it's been good for you so far. In a moment, we'll have our annual highlights, our predictions special. But first, I wanted to let you into some good news. Producer Matt, some music, if you please. Well, the Media Podcast is going weekly. Starting from the 4th of February, we'll be with you every Friday with the latest media news and insights from your favourite independent media podcast. And because we're well aware of how much talk of BBC charter renewal negotiations we can all take, we'll also be bringing in new voices from across the industry to inspire you to greatness. But we can only take this step with your support. So if you can afford to, please join us on the new Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/mediapod. Now, as the country opens up again, we're looking to build a proper community with you, our listeners. And this is very much just the beginning. So head over to patreon.com/mediapod and be the first to hear more. Right, on with the show. Hello and welcome to the Media Podcast, your guide to the top UK media stories of the week. I'm Matt Deegan and this is our sixth annual predictions special, where we invite a select group of media professionals to look ahead at the trends that will define 2022. Get ready to hear about AVODs, the rocky road ahead for the BBC, and much, much more. Plus, we'll also hold our pundits to account for what they said last year. That's all to come in today's Media Podcast. And joining me to start this year, we welcome back The Guardian's Jim Waterson. And we have a new guest on the show, Hannah Russell from podcast consultants Mags Creative. Hannah, welcome to the show.
Hi, Matt. Happy to be here.
We're going to start this media trend special looking at the medium we are using right now, the medium of the podcast. You're from the team behind the hit show Deliciously Ella. So Mags Creative have been around for quite a while now. Have you found it's changed over the past few years?
We've been around since 2018, so yeah, a while, but still feel relatively young. And it's definitely changed. It's changed so much. I mean, when we were starting out, we work a lot with influencers and people with audiences on other platforms, and transferring those audiences from existing platforms over to podcasting was much, much easier. And I think what we found over the course of those 4 years is that it's just not enough anymore to be someone with an audience on social or elsewhere and just launch a podcast. It's really not enough. So yeah, that's been one of the big changes. But I think kind of exciting new content developments, bigger audiences, it's grown.
Okay, well, let's start with your first prediction for 2022. If you want to start with a safe one, that's fine. If you want to go all in, up to you. Prediction number one, what have you got?
Oh God, no pressure. So I think my first prediction for this year is that podcasts and TV become more than just siblings who share the same house. And I think what I mean by that is I think that the link between those two industries is going to deepen in various ways. So I think we've seen that, you know, we've got companion shows to existing TV shows launching in podcasts, and they do really, really well. But I think there are going to be ways of working together that kind of exist outside of that. So we're going to look at maybe some of the larger TV production companies making big hires to build out their podcasting teams. I think people realise now podcast and TV, not the same thing, different kind of production skills. But I think there's also going to be a kind of genuine content development opportunity for TV companies. And we've talked about that for a while. So, you know, we've heard it's cheaper, it's easier, but it is cheaper and it is easier. And I think with the kind of continuation of the pandemic and the restrictions and cost implications that COVID has on TV development, I think there are really going to be some opportunities for TV companies and podcast companies to work together, to test ideas quickly, to build audiences, to see how talent perform. And I think the interesting thing for me is that for TV companies, you know, I've talked and thought for a while that actually sometimes the commercials don't make sense. But I think what they're looking at here is long-term IP ownership. So building something either in-house or in partnership with a podcast company, retaining more of that ownership than you would in a TV deal. And suddenly you're sort of building out the content and IP arm of your business. And I think that's going to start to happen over the next couple of months.
Because with the chats I've had with TV companies, they often see the podcast thing as a nice extra to have. Do you think you're saying it's going to become much more front and center of what they're doing?
Definitely. And I think that comes with, you know, podcasting, is it a bubble or is it here to stay? And I think actually it is sticking around. Obviously, that's my prediction. I've bet my whole business on it, but I really do think that. And I think, you know, audio off screen, the whole move away from spending hours and hours looking at screens, I think podcasts are going to play into that, and podcasts are going to grow as a result. And so as a TV company, I would be looking at ways to diversify the type of content I make and test things before I do it as well. So I think those relationships are going to get deeper. It's going to be collaboration. It's going to be hiring, maybe some small acquisitions, because I mean, there's a lot of kind of indie podcast companies, maybe with some of the bigger TV development companies. But I think, yeah, it's going to get more serious.
Jim Watson, welcome back. What have you got for us then? Prediction number one.
Prediction number one is this is the year that the BBC will actually successfully close a broadcast channel, even when all of the inevitable backlash, politicians kicking off about it, viewers bemoaning it and wanting to cancel their license fee, they will actually go, we're going to have to make a saving. We're going to actually do this properly. And something that we know and love will vanish from the airwaves.
So this is closing something down and then not even reopening it later on.
Yeah, that's the normal way that they do this. Or, you know, Tim Davie in 2010 went, well, we can't have the Asian Network and Six Music. And in the process, accidentally doubled Six Music's entire listening figures in a year. You know, I think this time he will actually see something through. Exactly what that will be, well, I'm not foolish enough to name a particular service, because that is just going to destroy me when you come back to these at the end of the year.
What? Okay, then, if you're not going to say that, what do you think is potentially on the chopping board?
Well, I would be worried if I was at Five Live. I think some of the chatter around things like BBC Two are a bit crazy, because you can just run those down and fill them with cheaper content rather than closing them. There's no real purpose in doing that. But, you know, if you're at a national station that isn't one of the really core offering, and you're not seen as a sort of bit of public service thing like Radio 3, I would be worried for something like Five Live, because I think it's the one you can make the argument that a lot of what it offers is replicated elsewhere. And if you're going to have to try and make tens of millions in savings, it's the sort of thing. But it's one saving grace there, is it's in Salford, which then becomes politically tricky. So God knows where it's going to be. But I think there will be a hole in the airwaves by the end of the year, at least one planned.
OK, that's a good prediction. BBC, of course, have likely got to save a couple of £100 million this year and next year. Not something they can put off. So it's probably going to have to really cut into real programming rather than mystical back office costs. OK, prediction number two, Hannah.
So my second prediction is that I think there is still space for some of the biggies, some of the tech biggies, to go big into podcasting. And I think it's going to be FOMO or it's going to be strategic, but I think there's still space for that to happen. So you've got YouTube, Netflix, Facebook, rumblings, Google. Obviously, we've got Google Podcasts, but are they going to do it properly? Is there going to be some kind of strategic thinking behind that? And I think, you know, particularly with Netflix, having what I just talked about in my first prediction, budgets for show development, thinking about kind of viewing it as a real kind of content factory. I hate that phrase, but I can't think of a better way to phrase it than that. And so I think some of those big tech companies moving into the space, into the podcast space. And I think with that, there is still some room for consolidation. So maybe there's still some acquisitions to happen. Obviously, most of the at scale players have been bought already. So Wondery to Amazon, Parcast to Spotify, but maybe a kind of collective of some of the smaller indies being bought by one of those big tech giants in order to kind of make their entrance, I think is not out of the question this year.
Interesting for other platforms getting involved in podcasting. Netflix made a hire from Apple, didn't they, this year? And they're sort of building out like a little podcasting portfolio. Google have gone very quiet on the podcasting front. Google Podcasts, I think the teams have all changed, have moved. The people have sort of disappeared. But then the thing that they have done at Alphabet is YouTube have hired a big head of podcasts. I mean, do you think that YouTube is going to be the new destination for podcasters?
I think YouTube is already a destination for podcasters, and I think it's a discovery destination, and I think it's vastly underrated. And I think the marginal cost of distributing podcasts on YouTube and using it as a part of an audience growth strategy for a podcast is really worth it. But I think you're probably looking at YouTube or Netflix kind of really, or both, hopefully, coming into the fray and sort of shaking things up a bit and potentially having the kind of strategy to become a really major player, maybe more quickly than, say, Spotify has done. Because I think there's a lot of momentum behind both of those platforms in different ways that could really help them to become quite important in the podcasting space.
Well, Netflix made a bit of a splash, or starting to make a splash in games. They launched in kind of a games app around some of their IP. And then one of their acquisitions.
And I think this is all set against the backdrop of the move to kind of off screen. So the idea that we're spending 8 hours a day working from home, and actually that screen fatigue has been a thing for a really long time, but it's really coming to roost. And so I think, you know, these platforms where screen time is the currency, I don't think it's a silly bet to kind of bet on some of that screen time being diverted, both for reasons of wellness and health and mental health, but also just for practical reasons, to audio kind of content. So I think it might not be a huge part of their businesses to start with, but if I was looking at the way the kind of world is going, I would certainly be wanting to put some of my hats in that ring.
And prediction number two, what are you going for, Jim?
Okay, this is the one that is a coin toss and it's going to come back and haunt me, but I think the government's just going to kick the Channel 4 privatisation into the long grass and we'll forget that it was ever a thing that we spent about a year talking about. I mean, every bus around me has an advert about why Channel 4 is brilliant and different, which honestly, I sort of feel like it's aimed at about me and about three other MPs because I can't believe any normal member of the public is going, why is there just sort of corporate Channel 4 advertising all over London at the moment? And I do slightly feel like, you know, have they worked out where the media correspondents of this country live and are just targeting those bus routes? But I feel that we're getting, you know, I used to be a political reporter. I feel we're getting a bit close to an election. The BBC stuff has shown that it's not necessarily the straightforward win that you'd think. And I also don't think that the Tory support base care that much about privatising Channel 4. And it was always John Whittingdale, the former broadcast minister's pet project. So if I were the government, I'd just pick a different battle. And I, you know, and if I want to pick a battle with the media, I'd battle the BBC because everyone has a view on the BBC. Whereas I think one of the weirder things with Channel 4 is often the view of it is driven by politicians who deal with their news output. And most of the public, I don't think, maybe this isn't a good thing for Channel 4, but I think most of the public don't necessarily have a strong opinion on it. They might watch it and enjoy some of it, they might not, they might dip in for grand designs, they might not. But the idea that there's any great clamour outside of a small section of the industry and a few MPs in Parliament for it to be privatised, it just feels like, why would you take up all of your time doing that about a year and a half out from a general election?
I mean, on the public front, obviously, there's only really Channel 4 News, I think, that the public maybe think about. Most don't ever watch it. And also, obviously, Channel 4 doesn't cost the government any money because all the cash comes from advertising.
Tell that to Nadine Doris.
Well, then the other week she said she was amazed to find out that young people watch television on YouTube. Who knew? Will the Channel 4 consultation outlive Dorries as culture secretary?
think in the sense that it'll be on permanent hold forever, yes, possibly. She has a career as culture secretary that could be measured in weeks or could be measured in a few months. But I liked how when she was announcing the criticism of the BBC and the House of Commons the other day, that she just kept repeating, well, frankly, I won't be around here to implement any of these decisions anyway. So it was very much, I'm announcing something, but there's no way I'm seeing this one through, which must be a fun position. You can just make all sorts of announcements and not have to deal with the consequences.
Like all good government ministers, just don't stick around long enough and you'll be all right. I mean, Hannah, a lot of talk about the BBC there. Do you think much about the BBC and what the BBC are doing? Does it affect you guys?
I think enough about the BBC, but I think Jim's point around, you know, the general public and Channel 4 is absolutely spot on. At no point have I ever had strong feelings towards Channel 4. And I think essentially, you know, the idea that there's a whole group of us out here really, really caring about whether it continues to be publicly funded or not is just not the case.
I mean, you don't really see on Twitter people saying hashtag defund Channel 4, do you?
Exactly. It's not really a thing. And I think, you know, that whole conversation is going to probably just fade into the background.
Have you got a final prediction for us?
I have a final prediction, and I would say my final prediction is more of a business opportunity than a prediction, because I think that this is the year when the independent podcast creator is going to get a bit more attention and should get a bit more attention. So, you know, we talk often in the podcast industry about the top 1% of shows, the shows that are reaching, you know, tens, hundreds, thousands of listeners. But actually, that other 99% is a huge opportunity and is only set to grow this year. So Acast did some research recently that said 10% of the UK population was planning to start a podcast this year. And I mean, I don't know how good their data is, but if you take that at face value, that's another 6 million podcasts coming into the ecosystem this year. It's going to be a range of quality. It's going to be a range of topics. But all of those people are dedicated enough to often find a microphone, work out how to do it, get an RSS feed and upload it. And I think those people are going to both deserve and require more attention in terms of the services that they want. We've obviously got hosting platforms. It's an open ecosystem, but where's the education? Where's the monetization for smaller audiences? There's rumblings of this and it's sort of starting, but I think it's going to really gain pace if that market grows at the pace that we're looking at it growing at.
So are you saying that those people will need kind of more services to help them cut through? Because obviously one of the problems for podcasting always discovery. And if you've got a lot of people spending a lot of money at the top, how do great shows that are secrets basically cut through to the public?
I think it's cut through, but I don't think I'm under any illusions that, you know, a large percentage of those 6 million independent podcasts are going to become big hits. I think what it is that these individuals have decided to make a podcast and their audience that they want to reach might be 100 people a month, but actually they want to do that really professionally. So it's around the recording tools, it's around the editing tools, making that as easy and seamless as possible. It's then around how do they create those assets really simply and easily for social promotion. And I think that's already starting to happen. But what about kind of continued growth or, you know, monetization of bunching together lots of different smaller shows and helping them to monetize their shows within particular niches? And I think it's a huge opportunity because you've got essentially the 99% of podcast creators out there who I believe are being underserved.
Thank you again, Jim and Hannah. We'll see you soon, but you'll have to be with us next January to see how you fared, and we will be catching up with you. Next up, we head over to our very own Mystic Maggie. That's Maggie Brown, media writer and author of the official history of Channel 4, for her media trends for 2022.
Well, my first prediction is that I am excited by Deborah Turness, the new chief executive of BBC News, who's been appointed, I think, to bring fresh blood, a fresh eye, and most certainly she will bring a dynamic presence. Now, she was recruited back by ITN only last year from different rolling news channels. We're seeing now the decision by Laura Koonsberg to move on, Hugh Edwards, I think, as well. I would think that there's going to be quite a changing of the guard at the BBC. And what I would love to hope happens is that I'm really fed up with the sort of idents of BBC News, you know, the way you get the dum-dum-dum and the red lines sort of trying to make you feel you're part of a globe. That intro has been around, I don't know, for probably 2 decades, maybe more, and it's just got very stale. So I say to her, I hope that she just gives the whole thing a good, how can I put it, a shot of dynamism. My second prediction is that I think we are finally going to see an online safety bill, a comprehensive online safety bill. I would expect later this year, although you can never be sure. This has been championed by the Conservative MP Damian Collins, and there are other very strong people in the House of Lords. Baroness Beaman Kidron is a key champion for the protection of children from pornography and other unsuitable material. It has been through the committee scrutiny stage. If the plans go ahead, we will know in April. My third prediction is I feel that something will happen to ITV, and I'm not exactly sure. It sounds a bit strange because it clearly has been the neglected commercial channel, which has public service broadcasting obligations, obviously. It's actually doing pretty well for advertising-funded television. I mean, clearly the lockdown periods have been huge, huge bonuses for the streaming services, the subscription services, which have tempted so many households to watch more and more of their very addictive content, which I'm only too aware. But whether anybody attempts a takeover bid, it's always been assumed it was too complicated, or some other expansion of the ITV empire happens, I just have a sense that people are waking up to this, to its potential, because it does have a strong studio base and it does have popular formats which it can both devise and then monetize. So it's been evolving quite slowly. Lots of things are in train. Some things, BritBox, for example, a subscription service, is not particularly catching on in this country, but it is catching on as a niche addition in America, for example. So this is probably the shakiest of my predictions, but it is a prediction that something will happen. My only final thought is this studio expansion, I don't see how it can continue to be very much a phenomenon of the outer London and the home counties areas, even though, as we know, Lord of the Rings is taking over a big empty space. I think it's in Hertfordshire. But this geographical focus, I think, is almost bound to take in other parts of the UK simply because of the cost of land and studios. Although, of course, a lot of these players like Netflix seem to have limitless pockets. But some parts of the UK will start to see more activity.
Jake Cantor, media correspondent for The Times, joins me now. Hi, Jake.
Hello.
So we love...
Happy New Year.
Thank you very much to you too.
Are we allowed to tell say that? Or do you subscribe to Larry David's deadline of January the 7th?
I wouldn't want to disagree with him, not in person anyway. We like getting you on for your predictions each year. I'm just having a quick look at last year to try and give you a bit of a score. So you started off with Oliver Dowden will kickstart a PSB revolution.
I did say that, and it was nice and vague, wasn't it? I think I was probably right on that front.
Okay.
I mean, look, we've got an ongoing review of public service broadcasting by the government, which is being conducted by a fairly shadowy group of TV executives and Illuminati. We're not entirely sure what they're talking about behind closed doors and quite how their recommendations and observations are going to manifest themselves, but we will probably hear more this year about the work that they have been doing and how that will shape policy over the coming years.
Yes, and Oliver Dowden then obviously kicked himself out of that revolution by being reshuffled like all good DCMS ministers are?
He was reshuffled very dramatically in September. It all happened live at the Cambridge convention, the RTS Cambridge convention. For a period of a few hours, there was a will he come, will he not come? And this all played out in the press room, which was very entertaining. Ultimately, of course, he did not come. And his speech was handed to John Whittingdale to deliver. And John Whittingdale gave an interview to The Eye a couple of weeks ago, in which he basically said, he appeared to indicate that he didn't massively agree with some of the things that the speech said. And I think he said, it wasn't me who bloody wrote the thing.
And then he himself didn't really make it past the next 24 hours.
He was sacked the next day, I think.
It's nice to know the government care so much about the media sector, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, look, it's not like we've got big things going on that are going to shape the whole industry for decades to come.
And then we've got another prediction. The BBC will close a TV channel this year.
Yes, I seem to make this every year and get it wrong every year. What the BBC has done quite cleverly, and I think I've spoken about this on the podcast before, actually, is instead of closing a TV channel and having to deal with the furore that that entails, they have quietly hollowed out BBC Four. Basically, BBC Four is now 86%, something like over 80% repeats, and barely anyone has kicked up a fuss. So they've taken that budget, that resource, and put it into BBC Two and BBC One. And BBC Three, which is relaunching on February the 1st. And, you know, there's been barely a bad word said about it. So it's quite a clever strategy of the BBC to redirect resource and not have to deal with the consequences of people getting angry.
People only watch Top of the Pops on it anyway, don't they?
Do you know what? I have never been a big BBC Four viewer. I don't know what that may tell its own story.
You and most of the country. Also, I suppose they trimmed down BBC Parliament as well. Lots of discussion about whether they keep that or turn that off or make it online only as well. So lots of cutbacks, but they keep the channels going. And as you said, are going to create a new one. Well, rebirth one later
yeah.
this year.
Yeah, so not only was I wrong, they're actually launching a channel.
Okay, we'll be back, Jake, with your predictions for 2022 in just a moment.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And just before we head back to Jake's predictions, we recorded this interview about a week ago, just before Nadine Dorries announced that the government intends to remove the BBC's licence fee in 2027. Just keep that in mind. Now sit back and enjoy the prescience of Mr. Jake Cantor.
So I've got a couple of BBC predictions, actually, for the year ahead. And I think the big one that we're probably going to see a bit more of this year is ministers, I think, signalling the end of the licence fee.
Okay.
We are going into a period where they're going to start mid-term charter review, which is essentially a half-time team talk on the BBC's future. And while ministers can't scrap the license fee for the next 5 to 6 years because it's enshrined in the charter, which lasts over a decade. What they could do is suggest that the next time the BBC's charter is up for renewal, which will be 2027, the BBC will have to find an alternative means of income. We are seeing Tory backbenchers calling for the end of the licence fee with more ferocity and strength of feeling than I think I've ever seen before. And we have not got the government disagreeing particularly with that ambition. And I think we will start to see this play out in a bit more of a meaningful way over the next 12 months.
Okay, so some more action on the BBC from the government. We had Mr. Peter Bone speak in PMQs this week, and we also had some national anthem-based chatter as well, which obviously is at the kind of the crappier end of BBC discussion. But interesting, I thought that Peter Bone thought it was a good opportunity to talk about that whilst giving Boris a rest from his Partygate attacks.
Well, it's a good distraction technique. I mean, if you know, if the government is under siege, which it is this week, the BBC is an easy target.
Do you think the BBC will push back strongly or be meek and mild as it kind of normally is?
The BBC's position is that the licence fee remains the most sensible way of funding the BBC. Now, you could argue that the BBC would argue that because it's a fixed income which guarantees it a level of support from the entire country. But I think what you'll see the BBC saying is, you know, is there the mechanism and the ability to deliver funding for the BBC through alternative means? The suggestion is that universal broadband is not as well established in the UK as it should be for there to be a sort of switch over to online, you know, subscription effectively. And I think you'll see some of those arguments definitely play out from the BBC.
Okay, and prediction number two.
So I wanted to go from sort of a big macro prediction to something a bit more focused. And it just struck me that we, you know, we had the first Andrew Marr show without Andrew Marr at the weekend. And it's going to be quite a high profile process to find his replacement. My prediction is that the next person to host the BBC's flagship Sunday morning show will be a woman. I think we've had the best part of three decades of two men fronting that show, David Frost and Andrew Marr. I think the BBC is keen to find a woman to fill those shoes. All the gossip at the moment suggests that Laura Koonsberg and Michelle Hussein are among some of the front runners for this position. Laura Koonsberg, of course, has announced that she is stepping down as the BBC's political editor over the Easter period. And of course, Sophie Raworth, I don't think is to be counted out. I think she did a really polished and excellent job of stepping in and keeping the seat warm.
And potentially for her, a lot of practice at it as well over the next few months whilst they make some decisions. So she's definitely going to be in the running. So who are you going to plump for? Laura Kay?
Are you going to push? Are you going to push me for one? I actually think it might be Michelle. That's based on pure speculation. I don't have sources are not telling me that at this point. But you know, if I was to hang my hat on one, it would be Michelle, I think.
And someone new joining me on the show, it's Dan Taylor-Watt, digital consultant, up until recently director of product for the BBC's iPlayer and BBC Sounds. Hello, Dan.
Hi, Matt. Thanks for having me.
No worries. It's great for you to be here. So you had obviously quite a big job up until recently. I'm sure you've had somewhat of a rest, though. I know that there's a little one that you've been looking after as well. So perhaps it's given you a bit of time away from Auntie, from the corporation. What are your big predictions in the media world for next year?
So I think that some of the obvious easy ones are just the sheer growth in content spend. So I was reading this week that the global spend is expected to go over 140 billion just from the top nine media providers. So even Disney on its own, 33 billion. And I was seeing the Lord of the Rings, the Amazon prequel reboot coming in September, 465 million just on that, which makes me feel nostalgic about the 100 million for House of Cards. I think specifically in the sort of streaming space, we obviously had a glut of new subscription on demand services launching in the last couple of years: Disney Plus, Apple TV, BritBox, Discovery Plus, etc. I'm not expecting any big ones to drop this year. I think it'll be a while till HBO Max comes along. But I think some trends we will see is actually an increase in ad-funded VOD, so from new entrants. So I think that the people are, you know, prices are going up. I saw Netflix have put their price up in the States just this week. So I think people will start to think, how many, you know, video subs do I really want on my bill every month? I think also a big increase in live streaming as well. So I think we have seen that happen, particularly in sport, with Amazon and Discovery investing there. I think DAZN look like they might snap up BT Sport and of course my old parish at iPlayer. And I think that the FIFA World Cup's likely to break a few live streaming records there as well.
So AVOD's interesting, isn't it? Because it doesn't really get the discussion that maybe the big subscription streamers like Netflix and Disney Plus do. So AVOD, advertiser-funded kind of video on demand. I suppose in the UK, like Pluto, is it? That's probably the more well-known ones. What's their role in the space now, do you think?
Well, I think so. I think Pluto is one. I think there are a few others that are sort of bubbling on under the surface. I think Samsung TV Plus is quite interesting. So Samsung have just, you know, put it in the front of their UI and done pretty well with just streaming, presenting it very much as linear TV channels. So there's a sort of the simplicity and convenience of choosing those, but just serving up an IP stream. So I think that we will see, you know, Amazon's doing something separately at the moment, IMDb TV, there's Plex as well, Rakuten. So there's various kind of players, but they're a little bit under the radar at the moment. But I think that we know that the sort of the size of the overall viewing pie is huge. And when the price point is free, bar a few ads, then that's going to be attractive, I think.
Because in America, Roku Channel, which is obviously a combination of the Roku boxes and then their own linear service, because of their distribution, that Roku Channel's doing pretty well, isn't it? That's becoming quite a big part of their business.
I think that it's interesting, some of the differences between the US and the UK TV economies and how Roku and indeed Apple TV have cut through in a way there that we've got a different setup here with free TV. But I know that Roku will certainly be looking to push into the UK more this year.
Okay, what else have you got for us?
So I think that you're encouraging me to be bold. I think content-wise, I think the easy prediction is that there will be another a sort of breakout TV hit, so the Tiger King or Squid Game of 2022. Not exactly zero funding, but I think that the Netflix are doing Inventing Anna, which I think could be based on a true story. BBC Sounds did a podcast on it as well. I think that could be, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's the breakout hit. I think, you know, more back to my domain of in terms of product development, I think this is the year that the battleground's really going to heat up for control of the TV interface. So Google and Amazon are going to sell a lot more TVs, or rather kind of provide the user interface on a lot more TVs in the market. Obviously the likes of Sky and Virgin are also keen to hang on to that experience, so I think that's going to be a competitive area. Equally, when it comes to another sort of battleground for that big tech are playing out in is the in-car space, and I think it's the refresh cycle on that is fairly slow. But I think this is the year we'll start to see Android Automotive really kind of get installed in more new cars. And that's significant because it's, for the first time, the experience isn't tied to your mobile phone. It's all integrated into the dashboard. So I think that's going to be an interesting challenge for audio players, new and old.
So traditionally, people are probably used to plugging in their phones to their cars, and sort of iOS appearing in the form of Apple CarPlay or Android Auto popping up. But Android Automotive is slightly different, isn't it? Though it's easy to get confused. It's that they've sort of built the operating system in the car for manufacturers, isn't it? Manufacturers sort of outsourcing how their cars' systems will work.
That's right. Yes, it's helpful to think of it in much the same way as on mobile phones. Then Google have provided the Android operating system, and different phone manufacturers have integrated that. They're looking to do something similar in car, and also, in fact, on TV. So to be the sort of the default operating system, and to provide that on an open source basis, such that manufacturers can layer bits and pieces on top of that core experience is a really attractive proposition, especially for sort of the mid-tier manufacturers who can't necessarily afford all of the investment required to do something totally bespoke.
So you might have heard there's been a bit of a discussion about the old BBC license fee. Nadine Dorries getting her Twitter out the other day, saying that this will be the last period where the BBC will be funded by the license fee. And there's obviously lots of different ways that the BBC could be funded: direct grant from government, advertising, subscription services. If we flash forward to the next license term, what is the product that the BBC sort of needs to deliver consumers in the future to kind of compete with all these other services if it's forced down a sort of subscription VOD Netflix route?
So I think the key thing is the BBC is meant for everyone and to provide a universality. And I think there are different funding mechanisms that could achieve them. I don't believe that subscription is one of them. I think that the subscription would fundamentally change the nature of what the BBC was able to do and offer, and it would become more akin to providers in other markets, whereby it's much more of a niche service or kind of not catering for the wide audience. So I think that the license fee is with us until 2027. I think that in order to compete with the very well funded new entrants in the market, then the BBC needs to continue to be well funded, whatever the best mechanism of achieving that. But I think freezing the license fee is would result in an effective funding cut, and that would play out on air, online, on services.
The BBC also has a bit of a problem because they're not allowed to borrow money to really go for it in the markets around the world. And already there's some kind of BBC Studios, what used to be BBC Worldwide, streaming offerings for like BBC Earth, I think, or for kids and BritBox in some markets. Do you think there is an opportunity for a global kind of iPlayer operation? Like if they could borrow the cash to really go toe-to-toe with Disney or Netflix, do you think they're in a position to do that with the brand and their own content relationships?
I think it's not really a question of pure money on that one. I think that a lot of content deals have been done around the globe, such that the BBC is not in a position to exploit the same catalogue globally. So I think it will continue to be a different offer in different territories, which is not uncommon for other players as well.
That was Dan Taylor Watt on his views for VOD in the year ahead. And to end the show this week, we have Media Podcast regulars Anne Charles and Faraz Osman. Hello.
Hello.
So, prediction time. Let's have a look at how you did last year. Anne, you're up first. You said that voice-based social media apps will be big in 2021. I guess we were talking like Clubhouse and Stereo and Twitter Spaces, those things. Do you think you were correct?
I was right. Yes, they were big. They're not necessarily as big now, but they were big during 2021. We had Clubhouse had huge months in February, June, July. Spotify launched Green Room. Twitter Spaces launched, and Facebook has launched whatever their version is in America that they haven't yet rolled out around the rest of the world. So we still don't know quite what to do with them, but they did have a moment during 2021.
And what will happen with them this year?
I don't think they will be as big this year. I think they've just become part of the staple things that people have in their systems. Maybe someone will decide that they're not going to do it anymore and roll it back again. But Clubhouse is bringing out more features that are useful. So I think it might move more into an alternative space of recording podcasts and things like that.
Okay. I think that's true. I think Twitter Spaces had a good year. I think where you've got a sort of social graph, it's much easier to get into. I'm very much aware of people popping up on Twitter Spaces with things that are sort of connected to me and my life and that I'm interested in. Whereas Clubhouse is sort of the bastard child of like LinkedIn and talk radio.
Is it just me then and my social graph? Because all of my audio apps, Clubhouse and Twitter, just seem to be like completely populated with people trying to sell their NFT scams and like their Bitcoin. It just seems to, where I'm sitting from, it just seems to have degenerated into like this weird pyramid scheme of like, please buy my NFT and build its value.
And have you jumped into many Twitter Spaces / live chat rooms?
Yeah, so I played a lot on Clubhouse and Twitter Spaces in the first half of the year just to kind of get across what they were doing. And then it just became the amount of time it was taking to run a room regularly versus the return on that time wasn't really worth it. There is a regular Clubhouse room that I go into that's got nothing to do with radio. It's to do with my other world. There's a really good room run by an excellent midwife who does a different topic each week for birth workers. And that's really good. And then Twitter Spaces, I think the problem with Twitter Spaces is that I'm not on Twitter to listen to audio. Mm. And despite the fact that obviously a lot of people I follow on Twitter are radio and audio people, the fact that we're not using it much sort of shows that it's not necessarily going to be the huge thing that it might have been. But I'd still go back to the fact that my prediction was not wrong for last year.
Congratulations. we'll give you a point for that. And maybe we'll have to do a media podcast after show party simulcast on Twitter Spaces and Clubhouse later this year. Your second prediction, commercial radio will steal a couple more BBC talent.
Yeah, there weren't as many as I thought there would be, but I think Andrew Marr counts. Mm,
absolutely. I think also there's been a few more people like Yasmin going from One Extra to Heart and a few more of those. So, I mean, Global particularly have been fishing in the BBC sea. Who do you think's likely to move? Who do you think they'd like to get hold of? And who do you think would move from Broadcasting House?
Well, so the two people that I am surprised haven't yet popped up there are Mark Mardell, mm-hmm. who obviously has left the BBC now, but I'm surprised that he hasn't been picked up again by anybody. And also Jane Garvey. Mm. I mean, I know the BBC's kind of kept her on, but I am surprised that nobody from LBC or Global has taken the massive hints that she keeps dropping to say that she'd be really interested in going there. And obviously with so many changes to retirement plans and redundancies coming up, and also the fact that pay rises are not necessarily going to be a thing, especially for senior male talent for a while. There are pickings to be had. So, yeah, I guess it depends on the contracts that are coming up on the commercial radio team sides as well with the talent they've already got.
Yes. Well, we'll come to you on your predictions for this year in a sec. First, let's mark Faraz's homework. A streamer will pick up MGM Studios.
Whee! That's a point, right?
That's good, yeah.
Amazon bought it for a cool, 8.5 bill?
It's a lot of dosh for not all of James Bond.
Yeah, it's a bit of... The deal itself is a little bit odd, but they did it. It's gone. And it's now... I don't know if Jeff Bezos is going to be the lion at the beginning of like of all MGM films now. That's what I really want to see.
Or his new girlfriend wife. Maybe.
Who knows? But whatever it is, I want to know what the new lion's going to be and if I can buy it on Amazon Prime to have it shipped to my house immediately. Can you get a lion shipped to your house via Prime?
I'm sure you can. It'd be from China and it'll take 3 months, but still, yeah, it'd be a knocked off lion. Do you think it'd be a good job if you had said, hey, Faraz, we want you to sit in the MGM archive and work out which IP we can turn into loads of series for Amazon? Would that be a cool job?
I mean, it is, Maybe, but I think everyone just keeps moving back to Bond and they're just kind of going, what's going on there? Because really, like, a Netflix-y type series, like, on young Bond, like, that they can do, or with one of the kind of other characters, be it Q or M or pick your character, pick your letter. It feels like that's what Amazon Prime needs to kind of really to supplement whatever they're doing with Lord of the Rings, etc. So that's what everyone's expecting to see. But obviously MGM, well, the Bond family, Eon, whatever they're called, are very protective over that IP, which I think is a bit of a shame because there's definitely an appetite to extend that brand in a way that can be done properly. So it may be that everyone's doing a bit of a let's wait and see how well Amazon treat Lord of the Rings before we let them have a go at our thing. And my view is that it's a play for that because there's not really a huge amount that MGM have bar that one big franchise. I mean, they have more, I'm being unfair, but like Bond is the one that everyone talks about.
Other predictions? Awesome storytelling will exist in the second half of the year.
I mean, it's 2021 has just been bonkers, right, for amazing telly. And so I'm chalking this one up to a win. It's, you know, there's been everything from Succession, Sex Education, Steph Let's Flats. Like, you know, being in a pandemic and being stuck in your house has never been so brilliant.
We are in a proper platinum age of TV, aren't we?
Right. It's crazy. And the reason I made that prediction is that so much stuff got put on ice and couldn't be filmed during the kind of first, let's call it big lockdown, when Boris was only having a couple of parties. But once he was like, everyone was raving in Downing Street, then it meant that some TV programmes could be made. And so it's just been a really killer year for great telly. And I can't wait to see more.
Then you had lots of thoughts about IP. You thought that last year would be the year of IP. Ad-based model will break. Sport will become kind of more important. ITV will be hit hard. Channel 4 will invest in IP. Where do you think maybe the traditional UK broadcasters, did they have a good IP year?
I basically said loads of stuff in the hope that something would be right. And I think there's some bits that are right in that. I think that the kind of the big IP sports story was the US Open and the Formula One final, which both kind of shared, well, not shared, Amazon gifted them to Channel 4, which I think was a massive boon for Channel 4, and they did well out of that. But it's interesting to see that, like, literally, like the rest of us, Ian Katz and Horseferry Road are having to kind of like open up their browser and go to Amazon.com to buy sports rights now. And it's a bit of a worry that that's having to be the case. And, you know, and also, and the other part of Channel 4's IP move is their, I think it's called their Global Formats Fund or something along those lines. And that's started to see some programming. There's a reality show about being afraid of the dark or something like that that's coming out. That's their first announcement around that fund. So they're very much playing with the multi-revenue model, should we say. My understanding is that Drag Race has come off Netflix and World of Wonder are going to be doing their own app, which will mean that you can be watching. You need to kind of subscribe to another thing. And obviously Drag Race is a massive bit of IP and they're looking to spin that off. Netflix bought Roald Dahl's back catalogue for an obscene amount of money. So they kind of are looking to see how they can exploit that IP into something new. So it's definitely, you know, IP is definitely the new oil, as it were, in a way that it's always been, but certainly there's a lot of horse trading around the space.
Well, we'll be generous and give you a point for that, even if it was slightly dubious. Also, you did say,
and I will market the IP around being generous of giving a point and turn that into a 20 episode Netflix series about how Matt once gave me a point on a media podcast.
Well, as long as I got some back end, I don't mind. And finally, you said that 2021 would be the year of game streaming, so kind of esports.
Well, no, actually, it's not It actually wasn't about esports.
It was more about the tech.
Yeah, about the tech behind these. I mean, esports is a kind of world on its own and one that's quite dense and difficult to get into. Although I think it's really interesting to see Netflix do an incredible series around League of Legends. And I think it's an animation series called Arcane. And if no one's seen it, it's brilliant. You don't need to be a gaming or esports fan to watch it. It's one of the best animations possibly that's been ever made.
Wow.
So do look out for it. But aside from the whole kind of esports thing, my prediction was around Microsoft Game Pass and Nvidia GeForce Now, and
so cloud-based streaming.
Yeah, cloud-based game streaming, which is it's a bit of a Amberlite mixed bag in success for that prediction. Game Pass, you know, went up by 37%, but missed its targets. It was, I think Microsoft were hoping that they would do an extra 50%. But it's been impossible to buy a games console this year, despite the fact that it's been one of the biggest launches of both the Xbox and PlayStation. And that chip shortage was seen ahead of time. So my prediction was based around the idea that it will be supplemented by game streaming. And it's kind of happened. Google Stadia is almost dead on arrival. No one really knows what's going on with Amazon Luna. But GeForce Now is kind of being the breakout hit of game streaming. The Nintendo Switch is what everyone's buying. And that console doesn't have the same horsepower as its competitors, the PlayStation and the Xbox. But they have started doing game streaming technology. So you can buy the game, but you don't actually have it physically on a cartridge or on your machine. It is a streamed game. So it's interesting that they're selling that as a standalone thing. And then obviously Netflix have got involved with Netflix Gaming, and everyone's kind of got their eyes on that to see what that ends up looking like. Really, it's been Apple that has kind of stopped this and put cold water on it, because they're not allowing it in the App Store. So that needs to settle down before we really see what that looks like. But the other side of it is the company Take-Two, who owned the publishing rights of Grand Theft Auto. They bought Zynga, which people may remember from Facebook games like Farmville and Word with Friends, for $13 billion. Which is bonkers. I mean, that's like, you know, almost twice the price of what MGM was bought for. So, you know, this space is still absolutely massive, and the amount of money that's spinning around in it is huge.
I mean, people forget that gaming as a sector is bigger than movies anyway, isn't it? It's a huge entertainment sector that's maybe ignored by mainstream media.
I don't forget, but my wife would like me to forget it. Stop taking over the TV to play the new Forza Horizon. But like, I still think it's an amazing industry, and there is some of the most creative storytelling in there. And like I said, Arcane with Netflix, the Uncharted film is coming out in cinemas next year. Sonic the Hedgehog, Pokemon, they are all spilling out into other spaces and really dominating stuff in the way that comic books did in the generation before.
So I'm not going to give you a point for that, because I think it's been a build, but not the year of.
Fair enough. I'll take it.
This year, Anne, what are you predicting this year?
Okay, I'm not feeling massively confident about all of these, but we'll have a go. Okay, I'll get that caveat in. So start off with an easy one. The BBC license fee settlement will be a cut in real terms and will not be good news to the BBC. I also think that they will not to do enough to mark their 100th anniversary. They might have a few programmes here or there, but they won't go as big on it as they could do. They could do a lovely, warm, fuzzy, remind you of how important the BBC is thing, and they just won't get round to it. So I think they will underplay the 100th anniversary. When it comes to speech/talk/news content, especially in radio, I think we'll see more convergence across platforms. So we've got GB News now simulcasting on radio, talk radio, they're going to launch talk TV, so I think there'll be more overlap of content going on between those. I'm not confident about this, but I think LBC could be doing more in the visual, definitely more in the visual space, but maybe they might start simulcasting on the telly. I don't know. I'll put that out as a wild card.
Do you think LBC will be available in a TV channel like form?
Yeah, I'll go as far as that. No, okay. Never mind the platform. But I think that the obvious thing to say would be that the thing that's missing from Bauer is a speech or a news-based station, and I think that they won't do it.
Because interesting, so Bauer acquired Communicore, which has News Talk, National Irish Speech Service. They've been very music orientated in the UK, and you're saying probably you'll stay that way.
I've got to put a punt out somewhere, haven't I? So I'll I'll say, even though it's the obvious thing for them to do, no news is it's too expensive, okay. It's too complicated, and they don't have the studio space. Why would they bother? So there you go. You've got a clip to come back to next year to go, ha ha ha, and got that wrong. But yeah.
Can I ask a quick question to you both as radio heads? Why have Sky News never launched a radio station? Why has it never gone the other way? And have they not been successful in doing audio in the same way that LBC and Talk seem to be doing pretty well in video?
They have been close to launching radio stations a number of times. They were going to take over LBC's AM frequencies, but then it was sold to Global, and then they scrapped that idea.
There was discussions with them to bring them on in some of the multiplex bids, and some weren't successful or didn't launch. So they've been close to it all the time. They Sky run the IRN news service, so they do a lot of audio and actually do quite a lot of podcasts at the moment as well. But they've just never quite been in that position to do the full radio job.
They did a simulcast at one point though, didn't they, back in the day? Or am I misremembering?
It's ITN. ITN did a radio simulcast.
Oh, it was ITN. Okay.
Early on. Yeah. But I mean, if you were Sky, you know, a newly sort of divorced from Murdoch Sky, and you're seeing what Talk TV are doing and what GB News are doing, what maybe LBC are doing, you would think, do we need to make Sky News more multi-platform? And I think GB News launch spooked them a little bit before it happened, and they realised it wasn't very good, or it wasn't as competitive as they maybe thought it would be. So you would always assume that they would think about it as an option. Anne, any more predictions?
The other one, I think, again, it might happen this year, might happen into next year. I think we will see broadcasters changing, broadcasters and news organisations, media organisations changing their standard employment terms. So we'll see an organisation get rid of London Waiting. They'll move a load of people to being a permanent remote position, and maybe, you know, let them claim back their travel to come into work, to have meetings every so often. Maybe we'll see some more contracts that are standard 3 days a week in the office and the rest remote. But I think we'll see a move away from London-based salaries for some roles, and a lot more kind of permanent work at home or permanent part-time at home being the standard in a contract.
And that's an interesting prediction. Already people like Spotify are now sort of agnostic with where you work. It'd be interesting people bringing that into main contracts. Okay, Fraz, what do you got for us?
Well, as a British Asian, I'd like to keep things spicy. So I'm going to start by pushing back on Anne's prediction about the BBC. So I absolutely agree there's going to be a licence fee freeze. But I think that there's also going to be this outpouring of love for Auntie. I actually think that they are going to go big on the centenary, because they will feel like it's an opportunity to remind everybody how important the BBC is, and do big nostalgia heartstring pulling thing in the Jubilee year. And I think we'll actually see quite a lot of content about how amazing the BBC is and how it's kept you entertained and educated and informed for the last 100 years. So I think the opposite. I think they're going to go big on it, and then think they're going to go quite hard on it. And that is going to result in a bit of a outpouring of love to start with, and then an outcry, which will result from the license fee being freezed, and then having the big services and probably some big brands be cut. They'll more than likely be one of those petition.gov things that will happen and then quietly disappear, and we'll see some either big services or more likely big brands disappear.
So what would the BBC, if they're playing sort of tactically, what would they threaten to axe, do you think?
Well, I think children's and education is the thing that is the gold standard at the BBC, and the thing that no one kind of really argues against. And so there's I don't necessarily know if they'll axe it, but I think that there'll be lots of push into that space to celebrate it and kind of slightly say, this is at risk if you do not kind of continue to support us. I think a couple of big dramas will have to go. So obviously Peaky Blinders is coming to an end. And there's kind of question marks over whether or not Line of Duty is going to come back. But I think we'll see less dramas and that will start, and more repeats as a result. But I think that there are kind of like legacy brands that we see. I don't want to make a prediction as to which of those brands will go, for two reasons. One, because I can't do that, and two, I don't think it's fair on the people working on those brands to kind of say that they're at risk. I think it's literally difficult to know what's going to happen, but I do think that we're going to see some stuff go, and it's going to make some big splashy headlines based on what those shows are or what those services are.
The thread of Mr. Tumble's head on a guillotine.
I think Mr. Tumble's probably all right, but I think that there might be some other children's brands, but certainly there's some other long-running brands that I think will need to be reviewed, as they like to say at the BBC, before going into consultation.
And then to be fine after all. What are you going for number two?
In parallel to that, I think kids' TV is going to have a gold rush. Kind of full disclosure, I'm currently the chair of the BAFTA Children's Committee, but I do think that this is the year for kids' TV. And the reason for that is, I think that streamers and SVODs are going to start pivoting quite hard from customer acquisition, which is where all the big dramas and the kind of big celebs and Hollywood folk kind of coming in and saying, look, you can now see their shows over here on their streamers. That's going to start pivoting into customer retention. And my belief is that the best way for customer retention, particularly on subscription services, is to get your kids to nag you. So I think that we're going to see quite a lot of play in kids' TV and family viewing. We've already seen that starting gun being fired with Roald Dahl and Netflix, like I mentioned earlier. But I think animation is going to be pretty massive and going to win quite hard. And we're going to see a move away from kids' content that is kind of purely based around merchandising and toys and Christmas, etc., into like really powerful, great programming for children, which can only be a good thing.
Are we going to see a renewal of the Kids Content Fund?
I think it'll be mad if it doesn't get renewed. I think it's been so successful that I just think it's an easy win. Jackie's done an amazing job with it, and there's been some really brilliant breakout hits from it. I think that you're going to have to see a retreat again, a little bit like the Audio Content Fund. There's going to be a retreat of people, partners and broadcasters away from Kids TV if you don't have some sort of intervention like the fund. And so I will be shocked if it goes. I almost kind of think it needs to be propped up even further because it's doing a great job.
Well, we'll probably hear about that very soon.
Hopefully so.
Anne Ferraz, thank you very much. So, Anne, where can people find out more about you?
My website is annecharles.tv, and that's Anne without an E, and Charles is in Prince. So annecharles.tv, and I am at SparkyAnneC on Twitter.
And Faraz, how can we stalk you?
I'm at Faraz Osman on Twitter, and the company Goldweller is gold_Weller.
That's it for this special start to our 2022 season. Remember to rip out this episode and stick it in your special predictions folder to refer back to this time next year. Thanks for listening. And if you haven't already, please hit follow in your podcast app of choice right now to get weekly episodes from February the 4th. And come join us over at Patreon to support the show in our foolhardy bid to be around for another 15 years. Jeez. We can aim to do this with your support. To show your support, please go to patreon.com/mediapod. That's patreon.com/mediapod. I'm Matt Deegan. The producer was Matt Hill at Rethink Audio. We'll see you on the 4th.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.